Congratulations, you're listening to Podcast Rebellion.
Welcome to Podcast Rebellion, everyone. This is Juco All-American, joined as always by Whiskey Wednesday. We are talking all things Ole Miss. We are going to go over the Tulane game briefly, the Georgia Tech game briefly, and then preview the Alabama game less briefly. And before we get there, we're going to talk about what we're drinking. I am drinking a glass of Sotol, and this is Desert Door Sotol, which is from Texas. I guess all of it is, right? Because it's all distilled from the Chihuahuan Desert, from the plants that are there. Let me check and make sure that's right. While you tell me what you're drinking. Are you drinking rum like always?
Yeah, I am, but it's a different kind, and it's interesting. So So you've probably seen Plantation rum if you've ever shopped for rum in the last 5 years, but they make a bunch of different varieties, and this one is distilled or aged, I can't remember which, in Fiji. So it is different, and the bottle has a little pair of straw fishnet hose on, which is a very interesting look. The bottle's like wrapped in this little I don't know, straw thing. But yeah, it's really good. It's an interesting rum. It's like very vanilla-y, but still has a little bit of like funky flavor to it. It's good.
Okay. So yeah, I have Sotol. What is distilled in the U.S. is distilled in Texas. Of course, there's plenty that's distilled in Mexico as well, but yeah, I was not crazy with that. Yeah. Let's talk about football. So Ole Miss beat Tulane 37-20, never in doubt, obvious, no reason for concern at any point.
Yes, they definitely didn't absolutely beat our ass for an entire half. That definitely didn't happen.
It was not 17-10 at halftime with a backup Tulane quarterback. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I made the mistake of telling people that I thought it would probably be a cakewalk. I think I used the term snooze fest. Once we found out that Michael Pratt was not going to be playing, and it was not a snooze fest. It was a crazy back and forth where Ole Miss distanced itself. I mean, anyone listening knows what happened. But, you know, what were your takeaways from that game? I don't want to spend too long talking about it. It is now 2 weeks ago. By the way, the reason we did not record a pod, Whiskey was traveling with some friends, and I had some family things going on, so that's why there was not a podcast last week, and we're recapping 2 weeks.
Yeah, so early impressions. My biggest takeaway is Tulane has a really good backup quarterback. Yeah, I don't think it was the Ole Miss defense being bad. They faced another quite good quarterback in the next week, and you know, I think their backup quarterback is, his name is escaping me, just like absolutely Kai played Horton. His butt off. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know what though? It's funny. You and I had that same takeaway. I'm looking at the box score. Horrific box score. Terrible.
Oh, really?
15 for 37, 231 yards, a touchdown and a pick, QBR of 18. 18.
What?
Yeah, like, I think some of that is that the first half he was much better than the second half. I mean, in the second half, things got away from them and they weren't able to kind of do some of the things that were working. But in the first half, it was like they didn't even miss Michael Pratt. I mean, he was very consistent, he was reliable, he was hitting guys in stride, that sort of thing. But yeah, in the second half, it did kind of get away from him.
Yeah, he definitely came out hot though, and he showed that he could make a lot of big throws in a way that made the game super scary the entire time. Their defensive line also just had a monster game. I think our offensive line is still a big point of concern, but given that we have a sample size of 3 games now, I think the issue was that Tulane's defensive line was stout and particularly motivated. They kind of ran out of gas a little bit down the stretch, but yeah, the first half they were monsters. And so it made for a really scary game, but Ole Miss like kept its head up. Jackson Dart, you know, really carried the team in a lot of kind of underrated ways, or kind of under the radar ways, I guess. Yeah, the run game struggled a ton. But yeah, he was able to, you know, rush for a good bit himself, for 41 yards, and then threw for 267. And yeah, just kind of made clutch plays. Like the fourth down touchdown to Michael Trigg was just a masterful play, that, you know, kind of went off the book.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my, all my
time. And there was the 57 yard field goal.
Oh yeah, I forgot. We have a really good kicker again, unexpectedly. This, yeah, so Caden, you know,
Caden Davis.
This,
it is so, it's so wild to me that Jimbo Fisher was just like, "No, you're not going to kick field goals at Texas A&M." He transfers. He's just lights out good immediately at Ole Miss.
Yeah. So an underrated thing that I forget about last season is how money Jonathan Cruz was as a kicker, because I don't know. I think the last half of the season was such a bummer that it was just hard to remember good things. But like, that dude was automatic from everywhere. And so is Caden Davis. And I was so underwhelmed by the decision to pick him up. I was like, why do we want a guy who's kicked like three field goals for Texas A&M or whatever? And yeah, he made a 57 yard field goal that was absolutely striped and good.
Oh yeah. From, it would have been good from several yards further.
Yeah. Well,
he's a good one, man. Yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting. Tulane had only at that point played against South Alabama, and Tulane had beaten South Alabama 37-17, but kind of looked pedestrian for the struggled against them for the first three quarters or so before really pulling away late. And I remember just thinking like, oh no, you know, Ole Miss is struggling to beat a team that South Alabama hung with for so long. And then South Alabama turned around and beat Oklahoma State 33-7 this weekend.
I forgot about that. Oh, man. I mean, yeah. I forgot about the common thread. That's crazy.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, Tulane beat Southern Miss 21-3. Tulane had 11 tackles for loss in that game. I think their defensive line is quite good, like you said. I actually don't. That's not enough for me to say that Ole Miss's offensive line is not very bad, because I think it is. But yeah, the Tulane defensive line also seems to be really good, and so those two things combined made it really tough for a little while for Ole Miss to find its footing. So a theme through the Tulane and Georgia Tech games, both, and this will be a way for us to transition over to Georgia Tech, has been the Ole Miss running game outside of QB runs. Well, actually, honestly, I'll just say this. Quinshon Judkins in the Ole Miss running game has not really worked. And on the last pod, we actually joked about how there was someone after the Mercer game who said, should we be concerned about Quinshon Judkins? And we laughed at that person, but maybe they were right. What do you think? Should we be concerned?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think... Well, so for those who weren't aware, he was doubtful to play in the Georgia Tech game with what I think is bruised ribs. And that's like one of those tough, nagging injuries where it's probably difficult to conceptualize how much that affects you. But yeah. Even the start of the season, it was a little different watching him run. And I wonder if there's something different with the blocking, where the holes just look different, or I don't know. Maybe he's been a little bit banged up for longer than we realize. But yeah, man, all Ulysses Bentley did was average 10 yards a carry on six carries against Georgia Tech and just looked a lot better and more decisive than Judkins did. Judkins did have an amazing play on what was an amazing play by Jackson Dart. I can't remember. Was it a fourth down? I don't know, but basically Dart dodged a defensive or a pass rusher who got free and then did like a forward like option pitch thing to Judkins,
who that was awesome
yards. And like he made a very heads up play, Judkins did, to like get himself in position and like turn it upfield really nicely. And you know, he made a couple other like nice runs, but it's not the same guy who you're thinking is going to go for 60 yards every time he touches the ball potentially.
Yeah. You know, against Tulane, he averaged 2.7 yards per carry. Against Georgia Tech, 2.8. And that's not good. Ulysses Bentley, gosh, that the one run that he had, the touchdown run from, I think, 21 yards out. I think it was a touchdown run. It looked like he was just shot out of a cannon. I mean, he just, his acceleration is crazy good. I can't, you know, judge a lot of the rest of his game. He had six carries, but his acceleration and burst in and out of cuts is really, really unique and serves an awesome role on this team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think through that those first three games, they've been trying to get Quinshon going. He's had the lion's share of the carries, even though he struggled. I think they know this is the time to kind of get him going and not like hurt his confidence too bad. But man, against Alabama, I sure hope Bentley gets more than six touches. You know, like,
yeah,
he's earned them. And yeah, Judkins has struggled and is probably still banged up a little bit. Like, we need to probably open up the rotation there.
Yeah, I agree. I think at this point in the season, you know, you keep giving Judkins plenty of opportunities to prove himself and everything. He's a spectacular running back, and I'm not especially concerned or anything like that, but you have to start giving Bentley more carries as well. And, you know, eat into some of Judkins's carries with that, see how it works out. So also in the Georgia Tech game, Haynes King, 28 for 41, 307 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, QBR of 67. I felt like he played a pretty good game. I did not expect a lot of him because of how awful he was at A&M, but that just may be that Jimbo Fisher is a horrific quarterbacks coach at this point.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, King did look really savvy. To me, he didn't look like he had crazy physical tools or anything, but he was he was an opportunistic runner. He was pretty good. And then, yeah, he was pretty good at little quick reads, and I don't think there's anything he was bad at, but yeah, he didn't really impress me physically, but he did just with his like consistency and, you know, basically his intelligence. Sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry to interrupt you. This guy at A&M last year, in a loss to Appalachian State, if you remember that game, he was 13 of 20 for 97 yards. No touchdowns, no picks. Sacked twice, QBR of 17.5 against App State.
Ouch. Yeah.
That's not the same guy. I mean,
no, it's not. And what I was going to say was that he didn't really have many weapons at receiver. There weren't any really like scary receivers or tight ends for Georgia Tech, which is probably one of the reasons why our defense started to get some confidence, because like for a while they were able to play small ball and make things like kind of difficult for us. So,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. One other thing in both of those games, the leading tackler was Trey Washington. Trey Washington won SEC Defensive Player of the Week for his performance against Georgia Tech. I really, really did not anticipate that from him going into the year. I thought he was just one of those guys kind of in the mix. He is definitely a solidified starter.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know. I thought that was a lot more apparent in the Georgia Tech game than in the Tulane game. Or I think he made bigger plays. Like maybe his tackles against Tulane were more like, you know, maybe you could have broken up the pass, or, you know, him just whatever. But he made a lot of plays kind of behind the line of scrimmage or near the line of scrimmage for Georgia Tech, blew up a lot of attempted screens and things like that. Yeah, he was very obviously a key defender in that game.
Yeah, they were trying to use the flats a lot, and he did not want any of that. And he did a great job. Also, in the Tulane game, we had, the linebacker play has been interesting. Kari Coleman and Trey Washington were the two leading tacklers against Tulane. Kari Coleman, to the best of my knowledge, still is not a quote-unquote starter for the defense. I could be wrong about that. He might have started, actually, against Georgia Tech. But, you know, I think the linebacker play overall, and I'm actually not specifically talking about Kari Coleman, the linebacker play overall leads a lot to be desired. And I don't want to spend too long talking about Sunter and Perkins because everybody's talking about it and all that. I think that, you know, at this point, what has been said is, or what is going to be said has been said. But, you know, we have neither among the guys who are kind of starting, we have neither significant athleticism nor sort of a right place, right time kind of approach. Like, I think that every linebacker is capable of bringing down the ball carrier, which is great. I think that's, you know, a good start. But in terms of like making plays in space, I think we have limited players who can do that. And Sunder and Perkins is one of those. And I would, you know, love for him to play more.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Coleman has probably looked like our best overall linebacker.
And
it is interesting that he hasn't solidified a spot as a starter. And he had a really important electric play against Tulane where he was kind of a late blitzer and knocked the ball out of Kai Horton's hand as right before he was about to pull through for a pass. And it was reviewed and called a fumble, but yeah, an incredible play. And yeah, he's shown some of, you know, what we were so excited about in getting him in the first place, the ability to really close on the passer quickly. And yeah, he's had a couple of really nice tackles. And yeah, I don't have a problem with Monty Montgomery or Jeremiah Jean-Baptiste, but I think they're maybe slightly better than Austin Keys, who they effectively replaced, and probably about the same as Ashani Sistrunk. I don't know. So it's kind of like four guys who are very SEC average, you know, maybe a little bit below average, like which is not to say they're bad, because
yeah,
you know, tons and tons of great linebackers in the SEC, but yeah, they're like a 4.5 out of 10 or a 5.5 out of 10 among SEC linebackers. So yeah, it's interesting. That's something that they'll need to address if they want the defense to continue to get better.
Yeah. Speaking of Austin Keys, I hadn't thought of him since he transferred to Auburn. I just looked, two tackles on the season.
That's because he went to a school that is worse at football, but has more talented players than probably not a great career move for him. Because yeah,
you know, it's funny. He tweeted like soon after he transferred, he tweeted something about how, wow, the grass really is greener or something like that. And it's like, oh, two tackles. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Is the grass greener? Do you still feel like the grass is greener?
Yeah. I wonder what caused the blood to go bad there with him, if it was like NIL or something else, or bringing other portal guys, or I don't know, but like he seemed like he was all Ole Miss and then like got kind of salty about leaving in a way that a lot of our other portal departures really did not. I don't know.
Yeah. One other player that maybe hasn't stuck out as much in terms of like tackle numbers, but you and I have both really enjoyed watching play. Dejon Anthony.
Yeah, he's really good. Yeah, seems to really play physical with receivers is always right there when the ball gets there. Has had a couple of really nice pass deflections and a lucky interception, but also one that he had to be heads up to hang on to. It was like they kind of threw it right at him, but going against his body. Was that against Tulane or Mercer? I forget.
Mercer.
Yeah, that was Mercer. But yeah, he's got something, man. I still like John Saunders too. I think that's a really good duo. And you know, I keep trying to, you know, kind of qualify how this year's group of safeties compares to last year's. And I don't know, man. I think I wrote an article today that said maybe they're slightly worse, but I'm not sure anymore. They've been a good surprise to me.
Yeah. Yeah. If they're worse, it's not by much. I mean, I'd love to have Tashim Johnson on the team, though.
Yeah, he didn't have a great sophomore year, but he appears to be doing really well for Oregon right now, which, you know, I would, yeah, I think we could definitely use a guy like that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously AJ Finley would be cool to have back too, but, you know, players graduate.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Alabama. Actually, sorry, before we do that, we have a few questions sort of about the team in general. So Jackson Dart, you and I are both big fans. I think that it's obvious through three games why we're big fans. And of course all of last season. Is he the best quarterback in the SEC right now?
I think he's roughly in a tie with Jaden Daniels right now. Daniels played a team in Florida State that made him look really bad, but Ole Miss hasn't played anyone that good yet. So it's a hard comparison, but man, like the step up that he's made is very clear now. And he's playing, fantastic ball.
Yeah. I guess the only other players who could potentially sort of make a claim would be, I don't know. Spencer Rattler, I guess, is kind of up there, but I think Jackson Dart is clearly better than Spencer Rattler. Maybe Connor Weigman from A&M, but that's more on just sort of the potential for him and, you know, his ability when you watch him, and less on what his production has actually been there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Connor Rogman's pretty good. I was just looking at his stats. His QBR is second in the country.
Wait, I thought Dart had the second or the highest QBR in the SEC.
Apparently not. Not according to ESPN.
Interesting.
Anyway, so yeah, he's top three, certainly. I guess as far as receivers, you know, Ole Miss continues to not use very many. And this has been a consistent thing all through Kiffin's tenure so far. I mean, any speculation at this point is just that. Like, it just seems like he very much treats things with receivers, especially like an NFL type of situation where you aren't going to play many guys and you have guys that you trust and think are good. And then a lot of guys who need to prove it in practice, I guess, but I don't know. I do really love thinking back to when, you know, Ole Miss has had teams, Chad Kelly and Bo Wallace, and those guys would occasionally have games where they had passes to seven or eight guys. And, you know, we were able to see what those players were able to do with the ball in their hands. And we just haven't really had that opportunity at all under Kiffin.
Yeah, it's weird. And, you know, you feel like it's kind of a play for continuity as well, you know, because if you have two senior guys who are the only guys catching the ball out wide for you, and then those guys graduate, then like that leaves so much more uncertainty than if you have a platoon of guys that, that rotate a lot. And it, it seemed like maybe we were setting up for that this, this year, but I don't know, maybe the Kiffin offense is harder for wide receivers. They do talk a lot about how they have a lot of option routes and things like that. And yeah, watching Aiden Williams, like he seems like he is going to be a star very soon, but also seems like he's like a little bit aimless out there. Like he's not playing with decisiveness and yeah, seriously. So, you know, Trey Harris, who looked, you know, like a Heisman winner at wide receiver for a game and one drive, got hurt. And then after that, we haven't seen any receptions out of Jalen Knox, Braylon Brown, Caden Lee, JJ Henry, and only one reception in that time out of Aiden Williams. Like all the rest have been Dayton Wade and Jordan Watkins.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And it's not like we have a tight end to eat up those targets, you know?
No. Yeah, I don't think there was a tight end reception against Georgia Tech, was there?
No.
Crazy. And yeah, what happened to Cameron Heath? He looked good in the first, like really good in the first game. And I don't think he's had a target in the next two games.
No, I don't think so.
Like what? I don't understand. But yeah, it's things like that that make it hard for, I don't know if we want to transition to the Bama game from this, but it's weird things like that that make it hard for me to feel super good about this matchup this weekend. Like there's a lot of reasons I do, but just like this kind of head scratching issue with finding guys to pass the ball to, it's one of the reasons why it makes it hard for me to be really optimistic about playing out a team like Alabama.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk about Alabama. That's fine. So obviously they're 2-1. They lost to Texas. They trailed USF at the half. Is that right? Was it 3-0 at halftime? Or did they, I think they scored right before the half from what I remember.
Yeah.
They kicked the field goal to tie it. Yeah. It was 3-3 at the half. Then they ended up winning 17-3, but like 17-3 there. Yeah. So Ty Simpson, or no, I guess Tyler Buckner started the game for them, 5 of 14 for a 15.2 QBR. Then Ty Simpson came in and replaced him, 5 of 9 for a 21.5 QBR. Sacked. Okay. So they gave up 8 tackles for loss to South Florida, 5 sacks.
Sheesh.
Yeah, that actually, so I looked up some Alabama stats on the year. They are 130th in sacks allowed. I'm sorry, not sacks allowed. Sack percentage, which is the percentage of QB dropbacks that end in a sack. And that is at 14%. 14% of the time that a quarterback has dropped back for a pass, they have been sacked. An Alabama quarterback.
Yeah, go.
What in the world?
I don't know, man. Yeah, just go and look at those star ratings of all the guys across the offensive line and then ponder that. Like, that's crazy, man.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched a couple of their games, and they just, their offensive line does not look good. People have been speculating that, you know, there was some sort of drama in the locker room where they wanted Milroe to be the starter, and, you know, he didn't start against USF, and so this was some sort of message they were sending. Maybe that's the case. I have no idea, but they were really bad, and I would guess that their players, their left tackle probably isn't thrilled to have surrendered 3 sacks to Daquan Evans, who is a senior who had, oh, those were, okay, so he had 3 sacks against Alabama. Guess how many sacks he's had in 4 seasons as a starter, including this season.
10.
three total, including the three against Alabama.
Oh man, that's too good. That's too good to be true.
He has never had a sack before this game, and he had three against the University of Alabama.
Man, wow. So yeah, man, I don't think that could be attributed to players trying to make a statement or what. Like, you're telling me guys on NIL deals, coaching under Nick Saban at the University of Alabama, are going to be so unprofessional as to like almost try to throw a game. Like, no, I don't believe that.
Right. And get embarrassed on national television.
Yeah. No way.
Yeah. I mean, there could be some underlying frustration that, you know, is in their heads and that sort of thing, but it's not as if they were just stepping out of the way and letting guys go through, you know?
No, I don't think there's any kind of like intentional player mutiny going on
in
Alabama. That's just,
I hope there is though. I hope there is. Because that would just make it, you know, more possible for Ole Miss to win. Although Milroe will be starting. Have you seen him play yet?
I've seen highlights of him throwing deep balls and stuff. I mean, I think he probably has plenty of athleticism and can make throws, but obviously there's some reason why he didn't start last game. And, you know, people kind of, I don't know, do people kind of blame him for losing to Texas? Or, you know, maybe not blame him for a specific play, but like, did that game leave them wanting to make a change at quarterback?
Seemingly to some degree, yeah. I mean, he didn't look good in that game. He threw two picks, 52% completion rating, QBR of 63. But, you know, the bigger issue in that game was they gave up 34 points.
Yeah, that's true.
And I mean,
Quinn Ewers is good, but I don't think he's as good as Jackson Dart, right? Like, I think people would probably say that was crazy as of last year, but I think so far this year.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, let me go look it. Since I also thought Kai Horton was really good before we looked at his statistics. Yeah, I mean, so far he has been, the Alabama game was, he was epic. He had a 90 QBR, three touchdowns, 350 yards passing, 63% completion. Great performance. His other two, which have been in easy wins against Rice and Wyoming, have been QBRs of around 60.
Interesting.
But no, I mean, I think that Jackson Dart could easily be as good as Quinn Ewers, if not better. I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think his rushing ability definitely gives us something as well. Like, I hope we don't have to run it a ton with him against Alabama, but honestly, like, we probably will. He'll probably have freaking 20 carries or something.
Yeah. I think he probably will.
Yeah.
He's going to have to carry it a lot. Go ahead.
Yeah. You called him an elite running quarterback when we were talking the other day, and I was like, I didn't really think about it that way, but yeah, you're definitely right. At this point, he's an elite running quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, he's averaging almost 7 yards per carry on 32 carries on the season, including sacks. Not that that means everything, but like, when you just watch him, I mean, he is shifty. He avoids, you know, tackles. He finds creases to be able to gut out extra yards. I just think that he's a joy to watch run.
Yeah.
And not just in a pocket passing quarterback kind of way. I think that he is a really great running quarterback.
Yeah. Like, I mean, obviously I get excited when any Ole Miss ball carrier is in the open field, but like, no, when he kind of breaks out in the open field, I'm thinking like he's going to do something really cool with the ball.
Right. Yeah. So other reasons to believe about Alabama before we get into crushing reasons not to believe. Completion percentage 55% on the season, which is good for 96th in the country. They are 71st in interception percentage. So you want to be number one in interception percentage. Their defense gives up a lot of completions through the air. And their defense is quite good, and we'll talk about that. I'll talk about that more. But they are not breaking up a lot. They are 81st in interception percentage on defense. So again, you want to be number one. They are not getting to the quarterback at a particularly high clip or anything like that in terms of sacks. They are not some sort of incredible shutdown third down defense. They're 43rd in the country. That is typically much higher for Alabama. I just think that, you know, overall, they have some flaws on both offense and defense.
Yeah. They're rushing for 4.4 yards a carry, which is probably under their average for the last 20 years or however far back you want to go. Certainly, they're probably not bad at it, but...
No, last year it was 5.6. And you know, you have to remember, they have played against nobody in game one. I don't remember who it was. And then Texas, of course, that's fair. Oh, yeah, Middle Tennessee in game one, then Texas. So obviously that's a good game. But then South Florida, and they've struggled to run the ball like Ole Miss has. So that's, you know, that means that that's potentially exploitable. The problem, and I guess now is a good time to get into where there are issues with Ole Miss's ability to win. The linebacker play at Ole Miss is not very good. And with Jalen Milroe, with the athletes that they theoretically have on the offensive line and at running back, I just worry that they may just say, all right, we're going to line up against you. We're going to go at you over and over again. And see if you can stop it. And I just worry that we won't be able to stop it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad that we are not going to be rolling out a 3-2-5, 3-2-6 against them. Yeah. But we'll see. Yeah, you're right. We could see a lot of Alabama running backs just running in the open field, not outside the realm of possibility. I don't know. I feel like we will probably do a decent job of limiting huge busted play kind of runs, but they probably will have an annoying number of just like 8-yard runs against us.
Exactly.
Where we can't bring them down, where we hit them. That's been a big problem, by the way. If you have not watched much Ole Miss, we will meet a guy at the line of scrimmage, and then it'll be 2nd and 5.
And it's not that we've had a lot of missed or broken tackles. It's just that once that first guy makes contact, then the ball still moves like 2 more yards or 2 or 3 more yards before the guy's finally down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's better than missing the tackle, but yes. It sure is frustrating.
Yeah, it's evidence we're on the right track. But yeah, frustrating. But you know, I like our defensive line. I like the depth that they have. I like the depth that the team has overall last year, or you know, compared to last year, where you know, depth clearly played a part in losing the Alabama game last year. Like, we definitely got gassed a little bit, and you know, one of the pivotal moments of the game, Quinshon Judkins basically drove down the field by himself, but then got too gassed to play in the goal line. And there was definitely a sense of, we don't know what to do now.
Yeah. Speaking of goal line, put JJ Pegues in at tight end on the goal line, because I don't know if you've seen this, but, or if you noticed it in the game, but in the Georgia Tech game, he blew up 2 dudes on the goal line on one play to allow for an easy touchdown run by Jordan or by Jackson Dart. Did you notice that?
I did notice that. Yeah. So I noticed they put Jam Griffin, the Oregon State running back transfer, in, and he kind of whiffed on a block on that same play that would have allowed Dart to go in completely untouched.
Right.
But yeah, just interesting side note. For those wondering why he hasn't played much, he might still be wrapping his head around playbook and assignments and stuff like that. But yeah, Pegues annihilated two dudes, and I'm a big fan of shoot, throwing the ball. I don't know
what,
in the red zone, like, just make him a guy that the defense keys in on when we're, you know, second and goal or whatever, you know, make the defense pay enough attention to him as a receiver and a blocker. Like, I think that's a cool thing that they're doing there.
So here's, I'm interested in your final sort of take on whether you think Ole Miss will win or lose. I'll go first though. I think that Ole Miss will lose to Alabama. I would love to be wrong, but here I've outlined that, you know, I think that we'll have trouble stopping the running game. On the flip side, I want to throw out a statistic. Through three games, Ole Miss on third down conversion percentage is 124th in the country. 26%. We convert 26% of our third down conversion attempts. And that is against Tulane, Georgia Tech, and Mercer. And I mean, luckily we're converting 80% of our fourth down conversions, so that's cool. But against Alabama, it's going to be hard. And if we're already struggling against some relatively lesser defenses, I just don't see how it works out.
Yeah, I agree. My hope for this game is that Lane Kiffin decided that even when times were tough against Tulane, even when the Georgia Tech game was tight for, you know, 1 2/3 of a quarter, he wasn't trying to show much. He wasn't, you know, throwing all his cards on the table, and that this game we will see some things, whether it's some new looks in the running game, some new, you know, short passes from Jackson Dart. I don't know what, but I'm hoping we've saved enough. We have enough left in the tank where that third down percentage isn't really indicative of how we're going to play on third down throughout the year, because that has been like a big problem.
Yeah. A huge problem. Okay. Well, that's going to be it. We will be recapping excitedly or not excitedly the Alabama game next week. Thanks for joining, and we will talk to you then.